This is the one-stop FPL podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of One Stop FPL with me, your host, Andy Johnson. On today's episode, we're taking a look at game week 38. Yes, we finally made it to the end of the season. It's the last dance this week with the final game week of the FPL season. Lots of great fixtures and good opportunities to get one final green arrow before the season closes. So let's get into it. Right then, game week 38 is upon us and all 10 fixtures will be played simultaneously, as is always the case on the final day of the season. Kickoff time for all of those is Sunday at 4 p.m. UK time, and that means that the deadline for game week 38 is Sunday the 19th of May at 2:30 p.m. UK time. That's just 90 minutes before all of those fixtures are played. So let's run through the fixtures quickly. There is, of course, two very significant games for both Arsenal and Manchester City. Arsenal are at home to Everton and Manchester City are at home to West Ham. Now, both teams still in the title race. It is in Manchester City's hands. A win for them means that they claim the Premier League title. That will be the fourth title on the spin. No one has ever done that before in the history of the Premier League. So, City going to make history, or will it be Arsenal's first title in 20 years? They need to do the business at home against Everton and hope Manchester City slip up. It does seem unlikely, but you never know. Other games on the final day see Brentford host Newcastle, Brighton are at home to Manchester United, Burnley versus Nottingham Forest, Chelsea versus Bournemouth, Crystal Palace versus Aston Villa, Liverpool versus Wolves, Luton versus Fulham, and Sheffield United host Spurs. So, a few other interesting fixtures in there. Of note, we see Liverpool have their final game under the stewardship of Jurgen Klopp. Could potentially be Mo Salah's final game for Liverpool as well, if the rumours are to be believed. We've also got a very good tie at home for Chelsea, who are very much back in form at the moment. They're at home to Bournemouth. And I do quite like the look of Spurs' fixture away at Sheffield United. Despite their recent form, they did actually play quite well in the defeat to Manchester City in midweek. And one other fixture that certainly whets the appetite of many an FPL manager will be Crystal Palace against Aston Villa. An Aston Villa side who have now guaranteed themselves Champions League football for next season. They will certainly be finishing in fourth place. That was confirmed after Spurs failed to beat Manchester City on Tuesday night. And we have seen a lot of images and videos doing the rounds on social media since then of the manager and the players popping bottles of champagne, partying into the night, celebrating their return to the European elite. So that's interesting to see. Could they have one eye on their feet up being on the beach before one final trip to Selhurst Park? And it's not going to be easy for them because Crystal Palace are very much the informed side of the Premier League. They have been playing some fantastic stuff recently with the return of Eze and Elise back to full fitness. Glasner's getting a tune out of them and Palace as a whole. I think it's 5 wins from the last 6. That's almost unheard of from a Crystal Palace side that have perennially been a mid-table Premier League side, but they're showing top-of-the-table form at the moment, and we'll come back to them and a couple of potential FPL assets that could tempt managers on the final day of the season. But before we go there, let's go back to probably the two most significant fixtures of Game Week 38, and that is, of course, Arsenal versus Everton and Manchester City versus West Ham. Now, most FPL managers will probably have somewhere between 4 and 6 FPL assets from both of those title-chasing teams. Probably the ideal mix would be a double Arsenal defence, single Arsenal attack, and a single City defence, double City attack. And that's probably down to the fact that Arsenal have the best defensive record and we definitely want a piece of Haaland and Foden. So the question is, where do you go with your other picks? Well, if you don't have triple Arsenal and triple City yet, then you may want to rectify that before the final deadline. And if you've got, for example, double Arsenal defence, you might be wondering which is the best Arsenal attacker to go with for that final home game against Everton. I would say the leading candidates are Saka, Havertz and Trossard. There is an argument to say Odegaard presents a nice differential as well, but Saka, Havertz and Trossard have been the main goal threats, so we're going to discuss those first. So, Saka. Well, first pro for Saka is that he's on penalties, and the other one is that he is almost guaranteed the 90 minutes. Certainly Arsenal's most important player in attack. And despite the doubt that we get every single week when he seems to hobble off towards the end of the game or at the final whistle, he's always managed to turn himself out for the next game. It was very briefly asked of Arteta in the press conference whether or not he'd be okay. Arteta simply just said he should be fine. So he's not playing too many mind games this time. And I do expect Saka to play. So no doubts there. Havertz is the other option for many FPL managers to consider. Slightly cheaper, 7.6 compared to Saka's 8.8. So if money is an issue, then Havertz could be a more appealing option to you. I would say, actually, I think one of the biggest reasons that he could be more appealing is if you're looking to make gains on rivals in your mini league or just trying to climb your way up the rankings. Havertz is currently 10% owned at the moment, and that is significantly lower than Saka's ownership at 49.7%. So I would imagine both of those will climb in ownership slightly because obviously Arsenal's fixture at home this week is a very good one and many will want to improve their Arsenal options. So both will go up. But if you want the differential to Saka, then Havertz is a very, very appealing option. Havertz is very much the form player as well. So whilst he's not on penalties, he is getting the minutes at the moment. He's got 90 minutes in his last three appearances in the Premier League. And he's been starting consistently for Arsenal for quite a while now ahead of Gabriel Jesus. His form in the last four is absolutely fantastic. He's got three goals and three assists in his last four appearances. No goals in his last two, but he has got three assists in a row. So Havertz, certainly a very appealing option. Another option that we could consider, and this one is even more differential at the moment at Arsenal, and that is Leandro Trossard. Now, he has been in absolutely fantastic form recently. He's played his way into a guaranteed starting position. Now, there are a couple of drawbacks with going with Trossard over Havertz or Saka. The first is his minutes. They are more limited. He's starting, but he's tending to get hooked around the 60 to 70 minute mark. If we look at the last few games, he's come off in the 65th minute, 80th minute, 62nd, 71st, 71st, 66th. So in the last six, he started them all, but he hasn't made it to the final whistle. That being said, he does have four goals in his last six appearances. And he's got good underlying data, getting good XG in his last two. And in his last appearance against Manchester United, came away with one goal, three bonus points and an 11 point haul in total. So really good return from him. He certainly played his way into contention for many FPL managers as a differential, and that is particularly down to the price. 6.6 million, that's a million cheaper than Havertz. And it might be that you want a piece of this Arsenal attack. You currently don't have one, and you can't really afford to sell one of your premium assets. You might not want to sell De Bruyne. You might not want to sell Son. Both with very good fixtures this week. If you've got someone like, say, a Gordon, and you want to upgrade him for this final game week, then Trossard could be the way to go at 6.6 million. I would say the only other one considering is Odegaard at Arsenal, but at the moment, the goals are not really coming his way. They are coming from the other three that I've mentioned. He has blanked in his last three appearances for Arsenal. I would say, look, if you've got Odegaard and you've got other issues to deal with in your team, I wouldn't sell Odegaard because it's a great fixture and he can obviously provide goals and assists, but he's just been a little quiet on that front in recent weeks and I would look elsewhere, but I wouldn't sell him if you own him. I would look to address other issues in your team. If you've literally got no other issues to deal with, you're really happy with your other starting 10 players and you've just got Odegaard in there and you just think, I'd like to move him to someone else, then you have the luxury of basically swapping him for almost any of those other Arsenal attackers that I've just mentioned. Okay, let's move on to Manchester City now because they've got an interesting tie at home against West Ham. And Manchester City will be heavy favourites for victory, heavy favourites to continue their dominance of the Premier League with four titles in a row. But one thing I will say is that they have made a history of making life very difficult for them on the final day of the season. We obviously saw it with the very famous Aguero moment where they left it very, very late. And then last season, they almost did it again, where I think on the final day they had Aston Villa, they were 2-0 down with about 70 minutes on the clock and they left it very, very late again. So it's going to be interesting to see how they approach this fixture. There could be some nerves. They didn't look at their best in the first half against Tottenham. A few wayward passes from the likes of De Bruyne, that's completely out of character for him. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach the game. Do they go gung-ho or are they going to be fairly cautious, a little bit nervous in that first half? They have to go for it. They've got to win the game because they will be expecting Arsenal to win theirs. So I've got currently myself a triple City attack. And I would say most people do have triple City already because of the double fixture in game week 37. So the big question mark, whether it's, you know, you've got De Bruyne and Foden and Haaland or you've got Vardiol and Foden and Haaland. The big question is, do you have Edison and do you have De Bruyne? Because Edison has been ruled out. And I think if you've got Edison, you either go for a simple switch to Ortega, who we know will start in the final game. And let's face it, it's really not that much of a drop off. In quality. Ortega, an absolutely fantastic keeper. We saw that in that second half when he came on for Edison against Tottenham. He made a couple of absolutely crucial saves, a one-on-one against Son and a brilliant stop down low against Kulusevski. So Ortega, and also Ortega's drop-off is not particularly significant with his feet because he's a very good ball-playing goalkeeper as well. I think a simple straight swap, if you do have Edison to Ortega, is a smart move to make. The only other question mark is around De Bruyne. Now, he came off early in the game against Spurs after being brought down by Pap Sarr. He has said in his own words that he thinks he'll be all right. He's said that it was an impact injury, that it was really sore, but it's not bad and it will be all right. They're some of the words from Kevin De Bruyne. So he himself feels pretty confident that he'll be okay. Guardiola will certainly want him available. He was not particularly forthcoming with injury news in the Friday press conference. He just said, we will see today. Yesterday he was off, today we train. So not too much given away there by Pep Guardiola. It may be that, rather frustratingly, we might just have to wait for any late team news just ahead of Sunday's deadline. I personally don't think it's going to be an issue. I think he will be fine. The fact that he himself has said that it will be all right suggests that that is very much the case. And De Bruyne, I think he will do absolutely everything in his power to wheel himself out there for that crucial game on Sunday. I do think if it does turn out to be an issue, it could also prove to be an opportunity. And that's just simply because De Bruyne's price is just so high that there's a lot of money invested in him. If you sell him, you free up significant funds. And that could be reinvested into a pretty impressive differential. And that's not a word usually said about this player. And it's Mo Salah. Now then, Liverpool, final game under Klopp. They are at home to Wolves. A really, really good fixture for Liverpool. I always like home games on the final day of the season for the strongest teams in the league. There always seems to be more goals in those games. It could end up being a bit of a carnival atmosphere. One final massive send-off for Klopp could be a big win at Anfield. I would not be at all surprised by that. Of course, Wolves are no pushover and Gary O'Neill has done very well with them, but they have kind of gone a little bit out of form, a little bit off the boil. They've had some troubling injury issues to deal with in the second half of the season, and that could prove fruitful for some of the Liverpool attackers. So there's a good couple of options to go with, Salah being the obvious one. Obviously, price could be a little bit prohibitive there. If you've got the funds to do it in one move, perhaps from a De Bruyne to a Salah, I do quite like that move if you want to be differential. I personally wouldn't sell De Bruyne. I think that as long as he's fit, I think he could be a fantastic differential in himself against West Ham. But Salah against Wolves could be fantastic. There is that whole narrative that people are expecting of maybe Salah and Klopp's final game for Liverpool at Anfield. It could be an absolute goal fest and Salah could be right in amongst them all. If you are a little more limited on your availability of funds, then you could look at either Luis Diaz or Cody Gakpo. Luis Diaz, 7.6 million midfielder. I will say that whilst his starts have been assured and he's had reasonable minutes, although he has been brought off in the sort of 74th, 75th minute in the last three fixtures, he also hasn't been getting too many returns of late. In fact, he's got just the one assist in his last seven appearances. So not the most appealing of options. I would say a slightly more appealing option is Cody Gakpo. Now, he has really improved his form recently, displacing Darwin Nunez in the starting 11, and he's done well. He's got two goals in his last two appearances and an assist. He got 12 points in game week 36 against Spurs, a 6-point return for that single goal in the 3-all draw away at Villa in 37. So he could be a nice differential, just 2.6% owned, 7.1 million. But the thing to remember with Gakpo is he is classed as an attacker in the game. So you need to look at the way your team is set up. If you're currently in a 3-5-2 and you like all five midfielders and you're bringing in Cody Gakpo, are you doing it for your third attacker? Because if you are, you need to decide which midfielder to bench. So just be careful with which player you bring in, and does that create a bit of a benching headache? And are you actually benching someone that's more likely to get you points than the person that you're actually bringing in? So just have that consideration in mind when you're bringing in a player who could potentially change your formation. And one final recommendation that I would look at Liverpool would be defender Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, he has been limited in his points returns in recent weeks. But as a one-week punt, I don't mind it at all. Obviously, very, very expensive. Unlikely to be able to afford Trent in one move. So unless you've got two free transfers, I wouldn't be recommending taking a hit for him. But the upside is certainly there with Trent Alexander-Arnold. Really high attacking threat from the defender. Now then, let's move on to Spurs, because they have on paper probably the best fixture of the game week, away at Sheffield United. Now, this Sheffield United side are Premier League record breakers, and that is because in game week 37, they broke the record for the most goals conceded in a Premier League season. 101 goals and counting is where it currently stands after that 1-0 defeat to Everton at Goodison Park. And so we should be all expecting Spurs to put a few goals past Sheffield United in game week 38. The problem, however, is Spurs' form, which has been underwhelming to say the least. They've lost 5 of the last 6, and their free-flowing, attacking, high-intense football on the front foot has been wavering somewhat in recent weeks. It's been slightly disconnected, not quite as effective as it was in the first half of the season. It was interesting to see Ange set up Spurs with no recognised centre-forward in the game against Manchester City. And while Spurs played quite well and controlled a lot of the game, they didn't really pose too much of a goal threat. Now, that would obviously be cause for concern if that was the case against Sheffield United. Son played out on the left rather than through the middle, and I do think that slightly hampers his potential to deliver attacking returns in the game as well. So we just have to be slightly mindful of loading up on Spurs players. With such a great fixture, it's understandable, but the form would suggest that we should approach Spurs players with caution. Son's form has been slightly underwhelming. Just the 2 returns, just 2 goals in his last 6 appearances for Tottenham. I think you obviously don't sell Son. That could potentially be suicidal with that fixture against Sheffield United and their defensive record. But that being said, he has been underwhelming. There is another Spurs mid who has been quite highly spoken of in recent weeks by FPL managers, and that's Brennan Johnson. Now, it is slightly surprising that, because his returns have been somewhat limited as well. Both Johnson and Son have just the 2 returns, in fact, from their last 6 appearances. But the eye test would suggest that Johnson is the slightly more appealing option. Not only because of his much more affordable price at just 5.8 million, so he could prove to be another good, cheap option to bring into the midfield, but also just the eye test would suggest that he is getting into the slightly more dangerous positions, doing more of what Ange Postecoglou has been asking him to do, which he's spoken about openly, which is getting in at the back post, completing those attacking moves and putting the ball in the back of the net. He's come close quite a few times, actually. His XG was actually over 1 in the game against Burnley in 36, but it was just the 1 assist for him that day. But he is looking quite promising. And as a 1-week punt, I do like Brennan Johnson for this fixture. It is also worth noting that whilst there are many weaknesses for Sheffield United, one in particular that stands out is in those fullback and wide areas. So I do like the look of Brennan Johnson, even Pedro Porro at Spurs, which we'll come on to in a second when we talk defensive assets. They look like really good options this game week as a 1-week punt. So if you've got them, you hold on to them. And if you haven't, they are worth considering bringing in. So with that, let's just briefly touch on Tottenham defenders, because it's been a wild ride for owners of the likes of Porro, Van de Ven and Romero, and Udogie actually throughout the whole season. They've all had really good spells and really disappointing spells. Romero has had really high goal threat and attacking threat throughout the season, despite the fact he's also come with plenty of baggage, plenty of threat of yellow and red cards, and he's missed games through suspension as a result of that. We've had Van de Ven, who has played now at centre-back and at left-back, has been a surprising goal threat at times, but has also missed half the season through a snapped hamstring. And we've had Destiny Udogie, who started the season fantastically. The underlying data suggests that he was going to get us loads of attacking points, constantly in dangerous forward areas, but often that didn't translate into attacking returns. And then Pedro Porro, the one that everyone has wanted to have for most of the season, and he has underwhelmed this season, not delivered the attacking returns that we all expected to. He broke a run of single point returns for a long time when he scored an absolute screamer in game week 36 against Burnley for a 9-point return. But it was back to the single point return once again in the game against Manchester City. Now, as I said before, in a 1-week punt, I like the look of Pedro Porro in this fixture against Sheffield United. Slightly weak in those wide areas, and Pedro Porro could prove to be a menace for them in game week 38 as well. So he's certainly someone who I wouldn't be looking to bench or sell. I would certainly be playing him if I had him in this fixture. Now then, the final team I want to discuss on this week's episode is Crystal Palace, because it's a really interesting fixture between Palace and Villa in game week 38. We've got a team in Crystal Palace who are probably the most informed team in the Premier League. 5 wins from the last 6 in incredible form, and Glasner is getting an absolute tune out of them now that Elise and Eze have managed to string a number of games together without getting injured. And that has proved crucial, I think, to their form, because the returns have been consistent since they've been playing together. Elise at 5.7 million is the slightly cheaper of the two, but his form has been electric. He's got 3 goals and an assist in his last 2 appearances, and they were at home against Manchester United and away against Wolves. So by no means easy fixtures, but the minutes are pretty good as well from Elise. 84 minutes and 87 in his last 2. So he's playing best part of a full 90 minutes as well. And so far, no injury scares. So it's been good to see Elise back playing since he's come back from injury, and he's looked incredibly dangerous for them. Eze is very much the same. He's been back a little bit longer, and I think has been equally as important for Crystal Palace's recent form. His goal scoring not quite as prolific in recent weeks, but he has been very reliable throughout the season as a whole when he's been fit. He did score last time out in game week 37 in that 3-1 victory over Wolves, and his underlying stats are fantastic. A constant goal threat along with Elise. The only thing I will say is that Eze playing centrally might mean that he sometimes is expected to pick up the ball in slightly deeper areas, get on the ball and dictate things if he's playing against a team that are going to be trying to defend resolutely. So that sometimes does hamper his ability to get further forward and be on the end of goal scoring opportunities as opposed to creating them. Elise, very much as a wide man, is staying forward, ready to convert those chances. What I will say about Elise as well is that not only is he converting the more sort of high XG chances, he's also scoring some absolute worldies from outside the box, converting very low XG chances. So out of the two, at the moment, I prefer Elise. But we don't stop there when discussing Crystal Palace attacking options, because there is one other player who has turned himself into prime Ronaldo at Selhurst Park at the moment, and that is Jean-Philippe Mateta. And actually, he has been the most consistent goal-scoring threat from Crystal Palace in the second half of the season. Incredible run of form from him. Since Glasner came in, his goal-scoring has gone through the roof. If we have a look, in the last 6 games, he scored 6 goals and an assist. So really, really impressive return rate from Mateta. And it's not like he's sort of scoring 2 or 3 and then blanking for a couple of games. He hasn't gone longer than 1 game without a goal since game week 25. Since then, he's got, I'll run through from game week 26 onwards how many goals he scored in each game week. 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 2, 2, 0, 1, 1. So really, really consistent goal scoring rate there. And so I think it would be perfectly understandable to go for a 1-week punt, bring in Mateta. If you've already got him, I think you absolutely play him this week. He's definitely not one of the front eight that you have in your squad to bench. And if you've got, you know, three good attacking options in the striker positions at the moment, well, might be worth asking yourself, do I go instead with an Elise or an Eze? But if you've got a weak spot in one of your three attackers, there is absolutely nothing wrong with bringing in Mateta for this week. Really, really impressive goal scoring form. I like Mateta a lot for a game week 38 punt. So those are the main assets to be considering for FPL in game week 38. I would also add that Chelsea's home fixture to Bournemouth is worth looking at as well. And that is because I do think that Chelsea have extra added motivation to win this game. If they were to win and Spurs were to lose in an unlikely defeat away at Sheffield United, but you never know with Tottenham's form at the moment, then Chelsea could in fact leapfrog Spurs into fifth place in the league, which would be quite remarkable given the perception of both team seasons. It would be quite astonishing really if Chelsea finished above Spurs come the end of the season. So there is a bit of motivation there for Chelsea. They're very much not on the beach at the moment. Still plenty to play for. And that home fixture against Bournemouth, I do think looks quite good. I would say that Cole Palmer, who is in almost everyone's teams, will be being considered as a differential captaincy option, with the vast majority captaining Haaland, no doubt. We'll come on to captaincy in a bit. But outside of that, going back to Chelsea briefly, there has been a bit of a merry-go-round in terms of availability, certainly in defence at Stamford Bridge. We've had a variety of centre-back partnerships, most of them due to injury issues, and we've also seen a variety of full-back options as well. Now, for the most part, we've been frustrated by Reece James' absence down to lack of ability to stay fit, and that has seen a really great budget defensive option emerge this season in Malo Gusto. He has, however, been on the wrong end of some recent injury problems himself, right at the point at which Reece James returned. And then what does Reece James do? He goes and gets himself a straight red card in game week 37. And just when he's got himself fit, he'll be out for another three game weeks. And that means that not only will he miss this game week 38, he'll also miss game weeks 1 and 2 of next season. So Reece James is out. That does suddenly improve once again the minutes for Gusto. He, I think, is a good option for this game week. There'll be quite a few people in game week 38 with a bit of a benching dilemma. So I, for example, have Arsenal defence and double Spurs defence. And with fixtures like Everton at home and Sheffield United away, I don't want to bench any of those players. So it could be that I end up benching Gusto in a really good home fixture against Bournemouth, which is frustrating, but you've always got to leave someone out. And I think there'll be many FPL managers in a similar position to me. You might have it the other way around, double Arsenal defence and one Spurs defender like a Pedro Porro. Again, really high upside on Porro, and it will just be sod's law that the 1 week you bench him is the 1 week you've been waiting for that haul, and he goes and gets it in game week 38. So I just don't want to take that risk. I'd rather bench Gusto and he gets good points rather than bench Porro and he gets good points. So sometimes that's the way that you need to figure out who is the best person to bench. It's the person that you feel most comfortable with missing out on those points should they bring home some returns. It's not just defenders, though. We've also got the goalkeeper to consider as well. Now, outside of Arsenal and Manchester City, Petrovic is probably, on paper, the best goalkeeper to have this week with that home fixture against Bournemouth. I do quite like Raya. If you're not already on triple Arsenal and you're in a luxurious position of bringing a goalkeeper in, I'd probably go Raya 1, Ortega 2 and Petrovic 3. Would be my top three keepers for game week 38. So Petrovic, a perfectly adequate goalkeeping option. Many will have him already in their squads and will be playing him this week. But it's not just at the back. Further up the field in the Chelsea midfield and attack, there are a couple of options that have been on FPL managers' radars in recent weeks. coinciding with the upturn in form for Chelsea has been the danger of Madueke in attack. He's looked pretty good in game week 35. He got himself a double-digit haul. And in game week 36. So it was slightly disappointing to see him not return in double game week 37. After many had brought him in as a bit of a punt for that double game week. That being said, a home tie against Bournemouth could still be worth a one-week punt if you fancy going down that route. But it's not just in midfield, because Nicholas Jackson's upturn in form has been impressive and really delivered for many FPL managers who brought him in on that game week 35 wildcard that many had the strategy of doing. So we had a return in double game week 35 and in 36 and one in the first game of 37. Just the one goal for Nicholas Jackson. He did blank in that second fixture of the double against Brighton, which would have disappointed a few owners. And of course, I think if you've got Jackson, you might have yourself a bit of a benching headache where you might be looking at him as your first sub on the bench. Or you just go, I think I play him because the fixture is really strong. However, if you don't have Jackson and you are interested in getting a Chelsea attacker, you might be tempted as a complete one-week punt to go with Christopher Nkunku, who came on early in the game for Mudryk, who I think got himself injured, and also got himself on the score sheet against Brighton. So there is a good chance that we see Nkunku on from the start in game week 38, probably alongside Jackson. And every time Nkunku has played, he has looked dangerous. The eye test certainly makes him look very appealing. So goal in game week 37 also will do wonders for his confidence. I'm sure he and Chelsea will want to finish the season in good form. So it'll be interesting to see how many people go for Nkunku as a bit of a game week 38 differential punt up front. So that is a summary of the options for us to bring in transfers for game week 38. Now let's turn our attention to captaincy, because this could be the most important decision you make this season. If you find yourself neck and neck with someone in your mini league, you're hanging on for dear life, or you're looking to pip someone to the post and take the crown from them right at the end of the season, or perhaps you've got an overall rank in mind, you're outside of it at the moment and you need something a little bit different to just get you over the line, then a differential captaincy shout could be all the difference. Now, most people are going to go Erling Haaland this game week. There's no doubt about that. He is the standout captaincy choice in most game weeks. And with City still going for the title, a home tie against West Ham, who have been in poor form, leaking goals in recent weeks, I do like Haaland as the obvious captaincy shout. However, if you're looking to take a bit of a risk, find a different way in which you can make up the difference between you and someone just ahead of you, then you're going to have to look elsewhere. Now, there's two ways of approaching a differential captaincy shout. You can go with the seemingly safer option of picking a traditionally strong team like City or Arsenal, but not going with the obvious choice. So at City, most people would select Haaland. You could go De Bruyne or Foden. Or at Arsenal, many would go Saka. So perhaps you go Havertz or even Trossard. However, I do like the idea of going with a team that not everyone will think is the most obvious captaincy shout. And that could be because of form, or it could be because there are other stronger teams elsewhere. So I do quite like Cole Palmer at Chelsea at home to Bournemouth this week as a differential captaincy shout. I think because of the way the fixtures have fallen, a really great differential captaincy shout will be Mo Salah this week. With that home fixture and everything we've said about Salah earlier in this episode, I do think that he will be a really popular differential captaincy pick. The issue is that he's not in many people's teams. So people are going to either be able to manage to get to him using two free transfers, or they could be taking hits. I also quite like Elise at Crystal Palace, or even Eze at Crystal Palace, who are away at Aston Villa. But the biggest differential, I think, for captaincy this week is surprisingly going to be Heung-Min Son. And I think that's just purely down to his form. I think so many people have seen the drop-off in form from both him and Spurs in recent weeks that they won't be tempted to go there despite the really, really appealing fixture. So there is definitely an opportunity there to be very, very different from the rest of the herd. That being said, there will be a reason for that, and that is, of course, what I've just said, which is his form. There is also the slight concern in how Spurs set up against Manchester City on Tuesday night. Not playing with a recognised striker and playing Son out on the left did slightly stifle the number of goal-scoring opportunities. That being said, facing City is a very different prospect to facing Sheffield United. One team scoring 100 goals a season, the other one is conceding those goals. So I would say that Son is probably going to be one of the most appealing and most differential captaincy shouts this game week. But overall, in terms of differential captaincy shouts, I think the two strongest are probably going to be Mo Salah and Cole Palmer. And I think with Salah, the reason why so many will captain him is because they will probably have had to take a hit in order to be able to afford to get him back into their squads. And when you do that, you kind of sort of naturally then want to make up those points back and justify taking that hit by making him captain. So I can see the majority of people who bring him in captaining him as well. I mean, why wouldn't you? If you're bringing him in and taking a hit to do so, there's a very good reason for it, and it's because you expect him to score well. So that's an understandable captaincy shout. And I also really like Cole Palmer. He's been in great form. He's been so integral to Chelsea's upturn in form in recent weeks. And I do like that home fixture against Bournemouth. So Cole Palmer and Mo Salah are probably the most appealing differentials. I do quite like the idea of a Kevin De Bruyne at City as a differential to the majority of people going for Haaland. And I also quite like Havertz as well. So there are a really good range, actually, of captaincy choices this week. And I do think that's good for the game in general. And we could see some swings in rank and positions in mini leagues on the final day, which is always good to add to the drama of both the Premier League and Fantasy Premier League as well. So there you go. That is it for this episode. As always, we finish with my likely team ahead of the game week deadline. For one last time, I'll run you through my likely team. For game week 38, in goal, I've got Petrovic with a home fixture against Bournemouth. Then a back three of Gabriel at home to Everton and Pedro Porro and Romero away at Sheffield United. That double Spurs defence. Are they going to return a clean sheet just for this once? I would dearly love that indeed, but I do expect more likely some attacking returns from them instead. Then at the moment, my midfield five is De Bruyne, Foden, Gordon, Palmer and Son. But I am thinking that I will sell Gordon this week. And I'm actually thinking that I'll be bringing in Elise at Palace. I like the idea of this 1 week punt against a very hungover Villa side. And then completing my starting 11, I've got a front two of Isak away at Brentford and Haaland at home to West Ham. That means that my eighth attacker is Muniz, who just sits on my bench. And that actually is slightly frustrating this week because Fulham have an away fixture at Luton. So there is the opportunity for goals for Fulham there. But he just can't find a spot in my starting 11 with those attacking options that I've got in mind. That being said, he doesn't even actually make my first choice bench option because that honour goes to Gusto, who, as I said, a bit of a benching dilemma for me, but I've got a strong bench this week with Gusto, my first bench option with a home fixture against Bournemouth. Dubravka on the bench as well, but would be surprised if he gets the final fixture. I think that will go to Nick Pope. And actually completing my bench, we've got Ait Nouri away at Liverpool. So there you go. That is my team ahead of game week 38. Best of luck to everyone one final time chasing that final green arrow of the season. And thank you once again to everyone who's listened to me this season. It's been an absolute pleasure doing this podcast for the first time this season. I feel like I've learned quite a lot as I've been doing it throughout the season. I've got lots of ideas and ways in which I can improve both the podcast and other One-Stop FPL content ahead of next season. I will be back for one more episode for this season. That will be a review of 38 and the season as a whole. But that's it for this week. A reminder one final time that the deadline is Sunday the 19th of May at 2:30 p.m. UK time. Don't miss it. Best of luck to you all. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.